that we're holding in Rosh Hashanah, page Ayin Dalet, Os Yurtes. We learned yesterday about the fast days that have to do with the Churban and the whole matter of that there are different times in Jewish history. Sometimes they're Yom Tovim, sometimes they have to be fast days, and sometimes we said there's sort of an intermediate thing where in principle they are fast days, but you have the option whether to observe them, although, as we said, as we learned the poskim, say that nowadays everybody has accepted them as obligatory, so therefore you have to keep them, and you can't be protest yet. So now, in a similar vein, the Gemara talks about the Yom Tovim Megillas Tainis. Megillas Tainis is actually the first part of Torah Sheva'al Peh that was written down for public consumption. We know for those of us who just started Shloshim, who just restarted Shloshim Prakim of Rambam, just had it the other day. Everybody else knows the idea that the Torah Sheva'al Peh used to be Baal Peh. It wasn't written. The maximum was that a person was allowed to write himself private notes. But he wasn't allowed to publish it as a sefer for public consumption. Then you have, though, throughout the time of the Second Beis Mikdash, there were various days when the Chachamim announced those are days of celebration because of different things that happened. Sometimes it's where they defeated the Goyim in a battle, the Derech Nes, for example, Hanukkah is in there, and other lesser-known ones. Sometimes it's when they won significant victories over the Baitusim or the Tzedukim or trying to distort Torah, different other kinds, sometimes where Chachamim was saved. We have, for example, the other day, the Shabbos was Chof Adar. It mentions in there that was the day when Choni Amagel davened for rain and was answered, and that Rebbe Koch Tzichin it a number of times, that's a day when Tefillah is particularly effective, and so on and so forth. So that altogether, there's about 30 odd days or groups of days in there. So it was written sometime before the Churban Bayis Sheni, and it lists all these days. All of them you're not allowed to fast on. Some of them you're also not allowed to make a spadim. So for each one, it gives the date, and it gives a one line thing about what it's about, and then it goes on to give more detail, in a braisa, which the Gemara often quotes these braisas. Here the Gemara is going to quote a couple of them. It's not very. It's arranged in Prakim because there's one parak for each month of the year, but the whole thing is not very big. The whole thing takes up a couple of pages, tops. I mean, with Mefarshim, obviously more, but yeah. So this, it was called Megillas Tainis, so they wrote it down, and it became a Megillah. It became something that people are able to have by them aside from Turdish Bechsad. So the Gemara gets into the discussion of whether Butla Megillas Tainis or not. Those various days that are listed there is the concept that you can't fast or make a spadim on them. Is that Butla now after the Churban Beis Hamikdash, or is it still in effect? So the Gemara goes back and forth on it. In the end, the Gemara concludes that Megillas Tainis is Butla, so therefore you are allowed to fast and make a spadim on all those days, with the exception, the Gemara says, of Hanukkah and Purim. Those we still have, those are not bottle, but everything else in there is bottle. Although there are poskim who learn that you're allowed to have private fast days on them. A person can have his own private fast for tshuva or for a tiny scholem or whatever, but that the tzibur shouldn't declare fast days on those days, even now. There's such an opinion among the poskim. They still have significance. They're mentioned in Sfarim, such as Dvaryu and B'yomer, that Rebbe sometimes mention them in Farbrengens, but as far as halachas of what you're allowed or not allowed to do on them, for the most part, that doesn't exist anymore. Anyway, so the Gemara has a whole discussion on that point. So the reason is, the Gemara ends up saying, because nowadays, after the Churban Bayis, we have all kinds of tzoris all the time anyway. If we were to have, it's like the tzoris, like sort of, they kind of all blend in together after a while. So like, how can we, there should be certain days when we're happy that we were saved from certain tzoris, then we would have to be doing that all year round. We'd never be able to fast, we'd never be able to make a stadium. So yeah. Anyway, so the point the Gemara wants to make though is, that we have to figure out if we said that the fast days that have to do with the Churban were Yom Tovim during the time of the Second Beis Mikdash. So now the Gemara is going to bring one of them, the third of Tishrei, which is Tzum Gedalia, which we're going to find in Megillas Tainis was a Yom that was declared as a Yom Tov. The question would be, why would the Chachamim of that time need to declare it as a Yom Tov if it's already a Yom Tov because Gedalia was assassinated? Mela, in other words, if you say that Megillas Tainis is not Botol, then you're saying that it was a fast day, and then when the Beis Mikdash was built, it became a day of Simcha, and even now we should keep it as a day of Simcha and postpone Tzum Gedalia to another day, then fine. But if you're saying that Botol Megillas Tainis, if you're saying it only existed in the time of the Beis Mikdash, then what's the point in the time of the Beis Mikdash of them setting it up as a Yom Tov? So the Gemara brings Kosev Megillas Tainis. B'tlosa b'tishrei b'telas ad kauta min shtaraya. On the third of Tishrei, they mevatel the writing of Hashem's name in documents. What happened? Shapamachas Gozra Malchus Yovan or Rishos. Each entry in Megillas Tainis is like this. Like I say, it has a one line summary in Aramaic of what the Yom Tov is, and then it has a few lines in Lashon Kodesh that in the style of a Braisa that explain the details. Shapamachas Gozra Malchus Yovan or Rishos Gzera Yisrael Shloiva Haskir Shem Shemayim Apiem. The Greeks have made a Gzera against the Jewish people in times of Antiochus, so thereabouts, that they shouldn't even mention the name of Hashem. As we know, they told them, Kisvu Lachem Akherin Asher, right on the horn of an ox, that you don't have a Chelek Velekei Yisrael, so they were trying to eradicate the name of Hashem from among the Jewish people. When the royal family of the Hashmonoim overpowered them and defeated them, Hiskinu, Shiumaskirin, Shem Shemayim, Vafilu Beshtoris. So they made a takona that they should mention Shem Shemayim whenever possible, even in Shtoris. For example, they would write a shtar. Now a shtar has to be dated, and in those times they didn't generally date according to Bria Sa'olam or the years of the Beis Mikdash or whatever. They generally dated according to the ruling king. So in this case, they would write, for example, B'shnas kach v'kach, L'yochan Kohen Gadol, Shehu Kohen L'keil Elyon. So they would make a point of mentioning in the Shnar that he's the Kohen of Hashem. And they would mention the name Kael over there. But when the Chachamim heard about it, Omru, they said, that's a problem. It's fine. We understand there's a reason to want to make such a takana in order that we should encourage the use of Hashem's name among the Jewish people, the opposite of what the Greeks were trying to do. But after all, eventually the guy's going to pay off his shtar, and then what do you do with the shtar? You throw it away. And it's a shtar mutabashva. Now the shtar is going to be in the garbage, and with the name of Hashem on it. And we have, in fact, in today's three parakim of Rambam, you're not allowed to destroy or erase names of Hashem. Ubitlum. So the Chachamim were mevatel this practice of writing Hashem's name in shtaris. But that day when they were finally able to be mevatel it on Gimel Tishrei, they declared a yomtiv. Marsha points out an interesting nuance in this that we're talking about over here about Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains that Abaya holds that Yanai Hamelach, famous Yanai Hamelach that we have in a number of places in Chas, and Yochanan Kohen Gadol are one and the same. Rava actually disagrees and says they were different people, but Abaya holds they were the same person. So therefore, what happened is, now the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin a story where Yanai slash Yochanan got angry at the Chachamim, thought that they're plotting against him, and ended up killing many of the Chachamim and ended up becoming a Tzduki himself. So now the Chachamim had reason to be concerned. Okay, well, till now we've been writing Yochanan Kohen Gadol L'Keil Elyon. The problem is the whole friction that happened over there, that whole story in Kiddushin, is that the Tzduki convinced Yanai, the Chachamim, have it in for him. They don't want him to be Kohen Gadol because they have a question about his ancestry. The Gemara says that Imer Nishvus Magian, his mother had been taken captive by Goyim and Magian, and there's the question whether she'd been raped by them, in which case she would be Osir to a Kohen, and her child, Yochanan slash Yanai, would be a Cholol. And then, sure enough, this whole story developed over there that one of the Chachamim tells him, set aside the tzitz, you don't deserve to be Kohen Gadol. So now the Chachamim are nervous. We have to take away this mentioning of Hashem's name in Shtaris, because like we're saying, otherwise it's going to wind up in the garbage. What if Yanai slash Yochanan then uses that as further proof? Look at that. We don't even recognize him as a legitimate Kohen Gadol, and therefore we're taking out this statement from Shtaris. So when on Gimel Tishrei, when they were able to be mevatel it, and a nest happened, he didn't get angry at them for that, then they declared it a Yom Tov. So it wasn't just the fact that they had managed to get rid of the practice of mentioning Hashem's name in Shtaris, it's also that they had special help from Hashem, that Yanai slash Yochanan did not get angry at them and massacre more of them for insulting them like this. So he was Kohen Gadol and king, and that's the Gemara mentions over there in Kiddushin, that one of the Chachamim said to him, fine, the king, okay, you know, but don't be a Kohen Gadol when there's a question about what happened with your mother that she was a Shuri. Yeah. It was a suffix, right, but even a suffix might be enough, yeah. So, um, so yeah. Um, So that was the big thing about it. There were other points that are made about it also, including Chassam Sofer has a very interesting vote on it. He says each day of Aseres Metshuva corresponds to one of the Aseres Hadibros. Therefore, Gimel Tishrei corresponds to Lo Sisa Hashem Hashemah Hashem Alekech Alashov. So on that day, they had Siyata D'Shemaya. They were able to take away the use of Hashem's name in vain, and therefore, specially, they declared it a Yom Tov. So anyway, the point is the Gemara again then gets into a discussion. Given that again, Gimel Tishrei during the time of the second Mishmikdash was already a Yom Tov because it was now we have it as tiny as Tzum Gedalia, but back then it was a Yom Tov because you may say because you l'sasim l'simcha. Then why did the Chachamim need to declare it as a Yom Tov unless it's that it should be in effect even after the Churban? And the Gemara goes back and forth discussing that point. Then at one point in the discussion, the Gemara says, you're right. It wasn't so much that they had to declare Gimel Tishrei itself a Yom Tov. The point is that the days that are mentioned in Megillas Tainis, you're also not allowed to fast before them or after them according to different Tanoim. There's a Machlokas Tanoim on that subject. So therefore, it wasn't so much that they needed to declare Gimel Tishrei itself, but rather that also Beis Tishrei should also be also fasting. Keep in mind, many times they only have one day of Rosh Hashanah then, so Rosh Hashanah could well be only Aleph Tishrei, and Beis Tishrei would be a weekday. So then the Gemara says, if that's the case then, so you're telling me the purpose of mentioning these days, some of them, is only not so much for the day itself, but for the day before or after it. Well, the Gemara says, here's another one. The Esru Matshmanya Ba'adar, on the 28th of Adar, also the surta tavta liyudoi, also part of what the Gemara is discussing is that you're telling me that if, according to one opinion, all of these Yom Tovim only continue to be in effect as long as the Beis Hamikdash is standing, and after the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, both the Megillas Tainis. But the Gemara's question is going to be, this story that we're going to tell now happened long after the Churban, and still it was added to Megillas Tainis. So the Gemara says, the estrumat, again, quoting from Megillas Tainis, the estrumat t'manya ba'adr, on the 28th of Adar, also besurta tavta liyodoi, good news came to the Jewish people, delo ye'idun minoraisa, that they're not going to have to abandon the Torah. What happened? Shapamachas gozra malchus arashar gzeira al-Yisrael, one time the wicked government, which means the Romans, made a gzeira on the Jewish people, shalo yasku ba'torah, they're not allowed to learn Torah, v'shalo yamulu espineihim, they're not allowed to make bris milas for their children, for their sons, v'shiyachalu l'shabbos, and that they're going to have to break Shabbos, they're not allowed to keep Shabbos. These are the three mitzvahs, Marashah points out, where we have a big difference between us and the goyim. In fact, I forgot to mention when we learned in Megillah about Yehuda Moisa Oda V'Simcha V'Sosin V'Kor, and we said over there Oda Zutora, Sosin Zumila, etc. I forgot to mention then there's a Sikha actually where the Rebbe points out the reason why those four mitzvahs are mentioned is because each of them, the Goyim have something similar to them. The Goyim also have laws and philosophies and whatnot, but our Torah is completely different than theirs. They also, some of them do Mila for health reasons, but we do it as a matter of Simcha and Sosin, and so similarly with Tefillin and similarly with Yom Tovim. Each one of them, they have something vaguely similar, but ours is so much different. So here also, the point is that these are three things where we're really distinguished very much from the Goyim. Shabbos and Milah are an Ois, Torah is Kihi Chochmas, Mubinaskem, La'ene Amim, so therefore the Romans had it particularly out for those things. Ma also Yehuda ben Shamua v'chaverov. So what did Yehuda ben Shamua and his colleagues do? And the Gemara goes on to explain that Yehuda ben Shamua was a Talmud of Rameir, which is what the Gemara is asking. Rameir himself lived a couple of generations after the Churban. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and they were alive for the Churban. So Yeshua ben Shamua would lived long after that, and still they're adding a date to Megillah Sinus. Anyway, so what did Yehuda ben Shamua and his colleagues do? They went to get advice from a certain Roman lady, all the great nobles of Rome would regularly visit her. Why they visited her, we can imagine for ourselves, but whatever. The point is that she knew them and she knew how they think. So she tells them, go and hasginu, cry out at night. You have in modern Hebrew, you have the word hasgana, a demonstration. It comes from this. So it means, in other words, go cry out at night. And that way, at night, the voice travels further. And that way, the ministers, the Roman noblemen, whatever, will hear you and have rachmanis on you. Sure enough, they went and cried out at night. Omru, when they called out, E Shamayim, woe heaven, meaning Laman Hashem, Rashi, Laman HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi says, for Hashem's sake, Lo Yachecham Anachnu, aren't we your brothers? After all, you're descended from Edom, which is Esav, who is Yaakov's brother. We've talked about before, where are all the Romans descended from Esav? Not necessarily. Some of them are descended from Kittim, which is a different nation, but whatever, at least the patricians and the nobles and whatever, the Choshever people of Rome are descended from Edron. I've mentioned before, actually, and I think before I've mentioned it wrongly, but since then I've looked it up. The Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a tshuva on the subject, where there was a fellow from Italy who became a ger, and he's wondering, does he have the dinim that a ger adoni is not allowed to marry into the Jewish people up to three generations? And Rabbi Yaakov Emden discusses the whole point. We know that the nations were mixed up by some chedev, but does that apply to them? And he goes back and forth, and finally says, you know what, to be on the safe side, Taka, he shouldn't marry a Bas Yisrael. I don't think anybody actually passed him that way in practice nowadays. Mice and b'chol yom, that there are gerim from different nations, and I think the general understanding is that any of them can intermarry into the Jewish people freely, but that was how Rabbi Yaakov Emden held. Anyway, so lo yachechem anachnu, aren't we your brothers? Lo b'nei ov echad anachnu, v'lo b'nei em achas anachnu, aren't we the sons of the same father and the same mother? Unlike Yitzchak and Yishmael, which are only half-brothers, Yaakov and Esav were full brothers, same mother and same father. Marsha points out, actually, that they're using this triple expression corresponding to the three Xeris. They're saying that you're our brothers and we're your brothers, it says in the Torah, and you're trying to get us to stop learning the Torah. You're saying we shouldn't do Bris Milah, but our common father, Yitzchak, had a Bris Milah at 8 days old. You're saying we shouldn't keep Shabbos, but Rivka lit Shabbos candles when she was 3 years old and married Yitzchak. So therefore, so all these three mitzvahs have directly to do with the relationship between us and you. And so they continue. Manish Taninu, we call Umavaloshin. How are we different than every other nation and every other, and the speakers of every other language? Chatting Gurzvan Alenu, Xeris Koshis, that you're making harsh judgments against us. Ubitlam, and sure enough, the Romans had Rachmanus on them and Rumavatol Xeris. So they declared that day Yomtiv in Megillus times. So then the Gemara goes on to ask, again, this is decades after the Churban, so then why are they adding new days in Megillus Tainus according to the opinion that both the Megillus Tainus, and the Gemara ends up saying that, yes, it's a Macholikus Tanoim, whether both the Megillus Tainus or not, and the end halacha is that both the Megillus Tainus with the exception of Hanukkah and Purim. Okay. Further on in the Perek, it talks about a din like this. So again, it's talking about the dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh, about Edim coming to testify that they saw the new moon. So the Mishnah mentions that whether the moon was seen Ba'alil or not Ba'alil, either way, the Edim can break Shabbos to travel to Beis Din to tell them that they saw the moon. What does Ba'alil mean? The Gemara mentions based on a pasuk in Tillim, that it says about the Torah, Kesef Tzorof Ba'alil La'aretz. The Torah is like pure, refined silver close to the earth, very clearly visible from the earth. So Ba'alil means when the moon is very clearly visible. So even though the moon is very clearly visible, and you might well say, well, lots of people have seen it, why should we break Shabbos to travel from out of town to Yerushalayim to come tell the Beis Din? Nevertheless, they're allowed to. Although then the Gemara, then the Mishnah brings a different opinion that says they shouldn't, but the halacha is they do. Anyway, so that leads the Gemara into a further discussion like this. Now, the Pasuk says, about the Torah over there, Imreis Hashem Amoris Tahoris, the words of Hashem are pure words, Kesef Tzorof, like refined silver, Ba'alil La'aretz, it's very clearly visible, very close to the earth, Mezukah Kshivasayim, refined seven times. Now, Kshivasayim doesn't just mean seven times, it means seven times seven. But we say in Kiddush Levana, we have the pasuk Ba'ur Achama Yishivasayim Ka'ur Shivasayomim, actually means that the sun is going to be, Limos Mashiach is going to be 343 times as intense as it is now. Seven times seven times seven. Similarly over here, when we're saying, Rashi explains, when it says in the pasuk Mezukah Shivasayim, doesn't mean that the words of Hashem are just like silver that was refined seven times. It means seven times seven, 49 times. That tells us that hints to the Memtes Shari Bina, and then beyond that is a 50th level, which now the Gemara is going to talk about. So, see, Imres Hashem Amoris Sahuris, Kesef Tzorof Ba'alil La'aretz, pure silver near to the earth, Mezukah Kshivasayim, that's refined seven times seven. So what is the seven times seven? Rav Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel argue what that means. Had Oma Nun Shari Bina Nivru Ba'olam, one says it means that Hashem created 50 gates of understanding in the world, V'chulam Nitnu L'Moshe B'Sinai Choser Achas. All of them were given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai minus one, meaning that he received 49 of them. Shenema, the Pasuk says, V'tchatsreyo Me'at Me'elikim. The Pasuk says, you made man little less than Hashem. Now this is in Kapitel Ches of Tehillim, where that whole Kapitel talks about what happened when Moshe went to receive the Torah, where first the Malachim are saying, Asher Tznahod Chal Shemayim, that you should keep your glory in Shemayim, and then afterwards you have, and eventually Hashem Adinenu Mo'adir Shimcha B'chol Aretz, without the Asher Tznahod Chal Shemayim, because the Malachim agreed the Torah should be given on earth. So that Kapitel was referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, and it says, the Pasuk, Batachasreu Me'at Me'elikim, you made man little less than Hashem. That represents that Moshe, who's the highest that anybody achieved, reached 49 levels where only Hashem has the 50th. And the Maharal makes a point, in other words, that 7 is more appropriate to Nivroim. Everything in the Gashmiistic world isn't 7. 7 days of the week and 7 major planets and so on and so forth. And then the 50th, which is already the eighth one, that belongs to Hashem. In Chassidus, we talk about the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu was passed away, and how Nivoy, where Nivoy is Nunvoy, representing that when he passed away, then he was able to achieve that 50th level. Anyway, so Rav and Shmuel make that, so between Rav and Shmuel, one of them makes that point that Moshe was lacking that one level. And then the Gemara continues. Now, Bikish Kehelas Lias Kemoshe. Now, Kehelas, which is Shlomo HaMelech, wanted to be in that regard like Moshe Rabbeinu. He wanted the ability that he should also be able to achieve these 49 levels. Maharsha points out, by the way, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, we find, Maharsha refers over here to what he says in Nedarim, we find it says in the Gemara there was a Talmud of Reb Meir who was able to understand the Torah in 48 different ways. So he reached one level less than Moshe. Only Moshe ever reached 49 levels. I think the Gemara identifies him as Sumchus, but I don't remember. It does say about Sumchus, but I don't remember if it mentions specifically that he was the one who had the 48. But in any case, the point is that he was, whoever it was, he was one less than Moshe Rabbeinu, who actually reached 49. So the Talmud reached 48, yeah. So now Kehelas, which is to say Shlomo, wanted to be like Moshe in that regard. He also wanted to reach the 49th level. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Bikush Kehelas Limtzei Divrei Chafetz." Kehelas wanted to find words of chafetz, words of desire. Meaning, in other words, that he wanted the seichel and the bina. Maharsha explains, Hashem wants that a person should have these things. Hashem wants that a person should understand elikus. So Shlomo wanted to be able to achieve as much of that as possible. Yotz a basko v'omreloi, but a basko came out and told him, as the pasuk continues there in Kehelas, v'chosiv yosho divrei emes, it's written straight, words of truth, which means, in other words, and what's the words of truth, as it says in the pasuk, v'loikom novi oy b'yisroch k'moshe, no novi ever arose among the Jewish people on the level of Moshe, so therefore, according to this Manda Omer, then was saying that Kehelas was not able to achieve that, because since the Torah says there's never going to be any novi as great as Moshe, then therefore Shlomo would not be able to achieve that. V'chad Omer, the other one says, the Nevi'im Lekom, after the Malachim come. No, when the Pasuk says, Lekom Novi Obi Sir Kamosha, it means, so Rav and Shmuel again are arguing, so one of them says that Shlomo did not achieve that. The other one says that he actually did, because when the Pasuk says, Lekom Novi Obi Sir Kamosha, means there was never any Novi of the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu. But Shlomo is not necessarily a Novi. He's a king. He's on a whole different level. A king is now Moshe had both. Moshe was a Novi and he had the dinim of a melech for many purposes. Shlomo was not a Novi, but he had the dinim of a melech. But according to this Manda Omer, we're saying that that it's perfectly legitimate that there could be a king who actually has the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu as far as the level of Alakos that he's able to understand, that he is able to reach the 49th level. By the way, we just had in Rambam Shlosha Prokin, where the Rambam makes the point that when it says about Moshe, so the Rambam explains the Derech Moshel, it means like everybody else only sees Hashem, as we know, Bispaklau Yashenim Ira. They see Hashem, they see Elikos very unclearly, like as though through a foggy glass or something. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see to the extent that Rambam says, like as if you don't know a person's face, but you're able to recognize him from behind. You're able to recognize, you see him from the back, and you recognize who he is. That's the kind of level of knowledge of Elikos that Moshe Rabbeinu had. In Igeres HaKodesh, your test, the Alter Rebbe brings over there from Kisrei Arizal, that Moshe's Hasoga of Nevuah is only able to reach up to Acharayim of Nehim, only Netzach Hod Yisod Malchus, and the Alter Rebbe says, what about the Mokobolim who perceived much higher? And the answer is they didn't actually see, Moshe actually saw, they were just understanding it intellectually, so it's a different kind of thing. Anyway, according to the second Manda Omer, we're saying Shlomo was actually able to achieve those levels of understanding of Torah and understanding of Elikos that Moshe was. So according to that opinion, what is the divrei chayfetz that Kehelas wanted to achieve and didn't? Because bikish implies that he wanted to, but he wasn't able to. Means because Kehelos Lodin didn't shabalev means he wanted to be able to judge the way that people think in their heart, shaloi be'edim shaloi basra. He should be able to judge and decide whether people are innocent or guilty based on without edim and without hasra. So in other words, Marshall says, according to that, divrei chayfetz would mean kafi chetzo v'dasli, with the way he wants and the way he understands with his heart and his mind how things actually happen. No, so that he thought that he could do that. Yotza Baskel v'omreloi, but a Baskel came out and told him, again, with the continuation of the Pasuk in Kehelas, v'chost of Yoshe divrei emes, it's written straightly the words of truth, which means it says in the Torah clearly, api shnayim edim, o shloshe edim yokum dover. A matter can be established and based in only based on two or three edim, and api, meaning also that you need hasra. So the Baskel told him, nothing doing, you're like any other Dayan, you can only judge based on the evidence that's brought in front of you, you don't have the right to judge just with your heart and just with what you realize on your own. It's brought, by the way, I think Sam Sofer brings, now based on this Gemara, it comes out that Moshe was able to judge on that basis. And in fact, he says, there's a Gemara in Bava Kamma that talks about, where do we know the concept, the Gemara discusses over there, where do we know the concept of Hamotzi Mechaveil of Araya? So the Gemara discusses over there that we learn it from a pasuk that Moshe says before he went up to Har Sinai the first time to receive the Luchos and the whole Torah. He says to the Zkenim that I'm going and Aaron Bechur are with you. Mi val dvorim yigash aleihem. Whoever has a case in Beis Din should come to them. Meaning, in other words, that includes the point that if he has a claim against somebody in Beis Din, then he has to bring his evidence. So the Chassam Sofer talks about that an interesting point based on this Gemara. Why is Moshe first telling that now, this basic concept of Hamotzi Mechaveil of Araya? Why didn't he ever mention that before? And the reason is because Moshe Taka was able to judge without needing Hamotzi Mechaveil of Araya. One person claims something from the other. Moshe is able to judge based on Dvorim Shebalev and know what the actual facts are. But now that he's leaving to go up to Har Sinai, and he's delegating things for the time being to Aaron and Kor, he's saying they're not on that level, as great as they are. They're not of the caliber to be doing that. They need actual evidence, and therefore a person is going to have to bring a raya if he wants to have a case in Beis Din. And Mashiach is on that level also, because we say that Mashiach is going to be Mordach the Doy, and he's going to be able to sniff out and then judge appropriately. Yeah. So it begins, this parak continues talking about the dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh and Edim for Kiddush HaChodesh. So the Mishnah mentions, originally they would accept anybody as an aid. Every yid has a cheskas kashrut. So a yid would come saying that I saw the moon, then originally they would just believe him, they would just take him at his word. But then the Baitusim started messing things up, and they sent false Edim to try to mislead the Chachamim, so therefore they had to make a takana that you can only trust an aid only if he brings some, only if he brings other Edim with him to vouch for him. And then the Mishnah says that those Edim to vouch for him can also be Mechal Shabbos to come to Beis Din if necessary. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Ma Kilkul Kilkul Abaitusim. What did the Baitusim do wrong? What were they trying to mess up? So Pam Achas Bikshu Baitusim Lahatas Chachamim. One time the Baitusim want to trick the Chachamim. Now Rashi explains like this. The Baitusim are a parallel group together with the Tzedukim. They're named that because we know famously Antigonus Yisrochai taught in Pirkei Avos, don't serve Hashem al manas v'kabel pras, serve Hashem shaloi al manas v'kabel pras, two Talmidim of his named Tzadik and Baitus, or some say it means not they themselves, but their Talmidim, whatever, misinterpreted that to mean that there is no schar v'onsh. Not don't serve Hashem because of reward, but be on a higher level, serve Hashem without looking forward to reward. They misinterpreted that to mean that don't serve Hashem with the hope of reward because there is no reward. And from that, they founded the groups of Tzedukim and Baitosim that accepted only Torah Shebichsav and denied Torah Shebaalpeh. Basically, it comes out from various places in Josephus's writings and a few places in Gemara also that really they were much more interested in political power more than anything else. But nevertheless, they also had their Krumah Svaris as far as understanding the Torah. And like I mentioned before, a number of the Yom Tovim and Megillas Tainis are celebrating days when the Chachamim were able to refute one or another of their Krumah ideas and reestablish the halacha properly. So now, what happened was it actually explained like this. We know famously that the Baitusim held that Mimachras HaShabbos, the day that the Omer is to be brought, and the day that Shavuos is to be celebrated, has to be on the day after Shabbos, whereas we know it means the day after the first day Pesach. So now, one year, it happened then that the what would have been the 30th of Adar came out on Shabbos. Meaning, in other words, the moon wasn't visible the night before. So therefore, ordinarily, that year, there would be 30 days in Adar. Rosh Chodesh Nissan and Aleph Nissan would be Sunday. Tesvav Nissan, 2 weeks later, would also be Sunday. And the first day, and the day of the Korban HaOmer, and the first day of Sfiras HaOmer, would be on Monday. The Baitusim realize they have a great opportunity over here. If they can bring false Edim, that will say they saw the moon, and the Chachamim will accept them, then they have the opportunity to make it that, no, Adar will be only 29 days, Rosh Chodesh, Aleph Nissan will be Shabbos, Tesvav Nissan will also be Shabbos, and Tezayin Nissan will be Sunday, and then it'll be exactly the way they want it. Tosfos actually brings up an interesting point. So what are they going to gain from that? If they mislead the Chachamim, then it's going to come out the Korban HaOmer is brought on the wrong day. So what are they going to gain from that? Korban is being brought on the wrong day and they're not actually Yotze. So Tosfos says they did at least accept to the extent we have later on in the Perek, there's a drosha, the Atam Afilu Shogigim, Atam Afilu Mezidim, that whatever day the Chachamim, the Sanhedrin, decide is the day for Rosh Chodesh is valid, even if they were mistaken, even if they deliberately did wrongly or whatever. So the Baitosim accepted that drosha. So therefore, they had no problem. Okay, if we mislead the Chachamim, and they end up making that Rosh Chodesh is on Shabbos instead of the proper day of Sunday, then fine, Atam Afilu Mezidim, and everything works, and that is the actual day that Hashem tells us to keep. And therefore, it is valid to bring the Korban HaOmer on that day, but they denied what it says in Torah Shabbat Peh, but Mimachras HaShabbos, meaning Yom Tov. So they picked and chose, basically, which things of Torah Shabbat Peh they accepted and which they didn't. No, so that's the point. If you say they didn't care about Torah at all, then yeah, it doesn't really matter. But if you take the view, and there are historians who say, for example, that maybe a difference between the Tzedukim and the Baitusim, where maybe the Tzedukim were more the ones who are interested in politics and power and nothing else, and the Baitusim are maybe more like, so to speak, the frum ones, like the ones who actually at least make a pretense of caring about halacha. Anyway, So they wanted to mislead the Chachamim. So they hired two people for 400 zuz, meaning they were willing to pay each one of them 200 zuz. 200 zuz in those times was generally enough for a person to live on for a year. So we're talking about an enormous amount of money. One of them was one of ours. He was actually a frum yid, a faithful yid, but they didn't know that. He pretended to be a baitus. And the other one was a true blue Baitusim. So Shalahem Heide Dusaviyotza, the one who was the real Baitusi, gave his Edus in front of Basin, and then he left, and then the other one came in. Shalonu, the one who was really secretly one of ours, a good guy, Omrulai came in, Omrulai, and the Chacham asked him, Emer, tell us, Ketzer Reiseh Salavana, how did he see the moon? Because that's how they have to ask. They have to ask, what position was it in, which direction was it facing, how wide was the crescent, etc., etc. So he answers them, I was walking up Male Adumim, which is a hillside not far from Yerushalayim. Nowadays, there's a Jewish town there called Male Adumim. I saw the moon. It was crouched between two rocks. Its head looked like a calf's head. Its ears looked like the ears of a young goat, of a kid goat. hound of Domus Litzvi, its horns looked like the horns of a deer, like the antlers of a deer. It was Novri Monachas Le Ben Yachosev. Its tail was tucked between its legs. Yeah, the moon. That sounds like a very strange thing. It sounds like it's just making up above a Maisa over here. So on a Pashta level, you would say that, yeah, he's doing that in order that the Chachamim should realize that something is wrong. But we'll talk about in a second. Marsha and Bala Akeda talk about nuances, the deeper meanings in what he's saying. But wait. Anyway, the Satsi boy says, I noticed it. I gave a look at it. The new Tati, and I was so startled. The Nafalti La'achoda that I fell back. And he continues, being ain't after my minimally, and if you don't believe me, that, in fact, that this is all a plot by the Baitusim, certainly the Sedini, that I have 200 zuz tied up here in my kerchief that they gave me to give this Avis. Now, what does he mean by this whole strange description? Marsha says that there is a symbolism in it. We know the Jewish people are compared to the moon, and the Goyim are compared to the sun. This was in the time of the Bais Shem, but already the Romans were starting to rule over the Jewish people. And they're starting to make Zerus against the Jewish people. In particular, one of the things they're out to do first is to reduce the power of the Chachamim. It's to reduce the power and the prestige of the Chachamim, especially in terms of Kiddush HaChodesh. We find other Gemaras where in later times the Romans actually made Zerus to try to prevent the Chachamim from being the Kaddish the Chodesh and from giving Smicha as another example. So Marsha explains the whole description is like this. He says, I saw the moon representing the Chachamim between two rocks, similar to the famous story of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava sitting between two tall mountains in a secluded spot to give smicha to the Chachamim at a time when the Romans had outlawed it. So now this Yid is hinting at here the Romans are trying to bring about the same kind of situation. The head is like a calf. Representing a calf represents a Talmud who wants to learn Torah from his Rebbe, but he's not able to because the Rebbe is not able to teach him. So the Romans are trying to prevent the Talmud Chachamim from the Talmudim from learning Torah from the Chachamim. He continues that the ears are like a goat, meaning these are the Talmidim who want to be able to listen to their Rebbeim, but now again they're like goats that are scattered all over the place, and they're not able to grow up into mature goats, into mature male or strong goats who are able to lead the people. Then he continues that the horns of it, the antlers of it are like those of a deer, meaning a deer that sheds its antlers every year, representing even when the Jewish people have any kind of power or any kind of prestige under the rule of the Romans, it falls off very quickly. The Romans try to destroy it as soon as possible. And meanwhile, the Hamoinam, the common people, are like the tail, they're compared to the tail, like Zon of La'arayis, and they're tucked between the legs, as in like they you can't even see them. They're so dangerous is the situation. So with all of this description, in other words, Marshall says he's hinting at how the Romans are trying to interfere with Jewish life, and the Baitusim are basically their cat's paw for it. The Baitusim are helping out the Romans with that. So then he says, if you don't believe me, then you can see that they hired me. So they're going to ask him in a second. Yeah, the Akedas Yitzchak has a whole different explanation of the metaphor that he's using. He explains the two rocks represent Esav and Yishmael that were stuck between them. The head, like a calf, he says, represents all the problem begins with the eagle, with the chete eagle. The goat represents, like a goat is very good to eat when it's young, when it's a baby goat, and its flesh is very tender and soft. Later on, it becomes older and it becomes hard and not so edible. The same way the Jewish people started out good and then they messed up after the Chet Eagle. So therefore, he's using the goat as a metaphor for that. He mentions about the horns like the deer. He says, similar to Marsha, that it means like their greatness falls away very quickly. And the tail tucked between the legs. Actually, I don't remember what he says. I don't remember exactly what he says about that. But also some idea. In other words, that it means that that things are not the way they should be. Anyway, Amr loy mi his kikacholachach. So the Chachamim asked him, who got you involved in this in the first place? Why did you're coming over here with this whole story and this whole mashal and 200 zuz? What gave you the idea to get involved in this in the first place? Omelahem, he tells them, Shamaiti should bikshu by Tusim Lahatas as Chachamim. I heard that by Tusim wanted to trick the Chachamim for the reason that we said. Amarti, so I figured, Eilach Aniva Odiyalahem, let me go and inform you. Shemi Yavori B'nei Adam Shein and Muhuganin. Otherwise, not Eilach people, real by Tusim might come, the Yatu as Chachamim and mislead the Chachamim. In other words, like this, I pretended to be a by Tusi in order to undermine them from within. He was like a double agent, yeah. Omruloi, so the Chachamim told him, Masayim zuz nesunim l'chav matana. The 200 zuz you can keep as a gift, hefker based in hefker, so we have the right, even though you didn't accomplish the mission that they sent you for, we're giving you the 200 zuz, we're taking it away from them as a knas and giving it to you. Vasertacha, and the one who actually hired you, the one who paid you, yimotach ala omrud, is going to be stretched out on the pillar, meaning he's going to be brought here and given malchus. Because they would tie the person when he's being given malchus, they would tie him to a pillar in Beis Din. So yimotach hala omud is an expression meaning he's going to be given malchus for hiring false agents. But oisa shah hiskinu. At that point, the chachamim made the takana shelo yomakablin elamakir mina makirin. From now on, we can accept edus achodesh only from people who Beis Din recognize it. Because in the future, if this kind of thing happens, you're not necessarily going to have a good guy who's going to act as a double agent like this, and you might have taka two by tusim might come and mislead the chachamim. So therefore, they had to make the takana that you now, from now on, you need edim to vouch for them. No, so we're saying in this case it was when it came Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Depending. I mean, obviously, if the Kvius was something else, then they'd have to, if they were going to plan something, they'd have to plan it earlier, obviously. And maybe not every year would they be able, not every year would the Kvius be such that they could do it. But this year, that particular year, the Kvius was such where they could try it. Yeah. That was, they were going to offer him money for testifying to basement. They paid him, the Bartosim paid. Now the Chachamim are saying, you can keep that 200 zuz. Yeah, he's saying, if you don't believe me that this is all a plot by the Bartosim, I'll show you that I have 200 zuz that they hired me. By the way, I did forget in the end to mention, you had asked me, yeah, that, this is, literally Nishmas Anbar Bas Ezra. Okay. Yonye Mashiach Ogo'ola, Chavbez Adabez. Besides for Mashiach himself is going to have the perfection, whereas it describes in the pasuk Yaskil Avdi, my servant Mashiach, is going to be very wise, Yoram Benisa V'Gavam Oid, he'll be very high and exalted. Besides that, we know Mashiach is Yisakinas Kol Olam Kula, he's going to fix up the whole world to serve Hashem together, as it says, Ki Oz Epechal Amim, himself Likur Kol B'Shem Hashem, that'll transform all the nations to call out Hashem's name together with the Gula Amit Esvashlem to take up Miyad Mash. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos, we were talking about as far as, for example, you were washing your hands, you can't dry them while they're still completely wet on a towel. You should, in principle, you should first dry them off a little bit, although the Altadeva says you don't have to be so careful about that. So now, more about dinim, about getting cloth wet. If you have a barrel that contains wine or that contains white wine or water or anything like that, you're not allowed to take a beged that's not usually used to cover it and use to cover it, because you might end up squeezing it out. If it's a particular beged that's usually used for that purpose, you'd be allowed to, because then you're not concerned that you're going to squeeze it out. Similar concepts would apply as far as towels and things like that, where you don't mind if they get wet, because they get wet all the time. So the same. But to use a different beggar, then that would be an issue. Similarly, in that vein, if water spills on a table, you can't wipe it up with a piece of cloth that you mop it on, because again, you might squeeze it out. Similarly, as far as drying dishes, when you have, for example, cups with narrow cups or whatever, the problem is, again, you may squeeze out water, so therefore, if it's a beggar that you're mocked to squeeze out, then you have a problem. Again, if it's a towel that you're not mocked to squeeze out, then there's not an issue. Nowadays, anyway, they actually have Shabbos towels that, to begin with, don't absorb that much water, and therefore you have much less of an issue in that regard in the first place.